By show of hands, who has been to a wedding this summer? Anybody been to a wedding this summer? Quite a few. Keep your hands raised. All right. Well, how about within the last year? Have you been to a wedding? Keep your hands raised. I think pretty much, okay, just about everybody, almost everybody within the last year has been to a wedding. You know, when I look at Instagram and Facebook, see social media, I think I have at least one friend at a wedding every weekend this summer, right? Just weddings all the time. Lots of pictures. You see the love and the joy and the happiness. They're just so picturesque. I mean, some of these weddings have been outdoor in the most beautiful, beautiful places. How many of you love weddings? Anybody, you love going to weddings? Some of you love going to weddings. Okay, next question, honest. It's okay. It's safe here. How many of you would be happy to never go to another wedding for the rest of your life? You're good. You've done it. You're all right. Yep, a few people, a few honest people. I'm good. Honestly, I'm good. I don't need to go anymore myself. I'm good. I've done enough. I've been to enough so far. But you know, there are many things to like about weddings, right? It's a big party. The family and friends all get together. A lot of times you haven't seen people for a long time, and it reunites everybody to get together and just have a great time, right? It's a wonderful time. You see this couple just beaming with joy and love and excitement. They're glowing. They're just so excited, so happy. And I have to admit that while I think it's really important to embrace the innocence and the simplicity and the love, I do think a little more realism in our wedding ceremonies might actually be a little helpful. Maybe if we are a little more realistic, it might be a little helpful, because marriage at its finest provides us with a partner who's going to stand by us through the joys of life, the greatest moments, the wonderful times. But they're also going to stand by us through those tough times, right? The downs in life, the trials, the suffering, the difficult times in life. But here's the reality that sometimes we don't want to admit and talk about. Oftentimes, the suffering and the trials and the downs of life are caused by our spouse. Yeah, okay, you're with me, you're with me. Don't laugh too hard if you're sitting next to your spouse right now. Sometimes, maybe even oftentimes, our spouse is actually the cause of the greatest trials and difficulties of our lives. And it's nothing, you know, nothing against our spouse. I think it's just the reality of the fact that our spouse is the person we're going to spend the most time with of anybody in this world, right? We spend more time with them than anybody else. And then we also have to make the most joint decisions with this person. And so it is simply inevitable that conflict is going to come with the person we spend the most time with and have to make the most joint decisions with, right? It's inevitable. So our spouse is the one that we have to compromise the most with and also probably going to have to forgive the most. A few weeks ago in our parents' Sabbath school class, we were talking about marriage and we read the passage and then open it up for comments. And the first comment that somebody made was, marriage is hard work. And everybody in the room nodded their heads. Yes, nobody disagreed with that assessment, that marriage is hard work. And so I think our weddings could use a little dose of reality. And I think there's actually a perfect opportunity built right into weddings to do that. What is the most famous verse or verses that are read at most weddings? We just read it, right? 1 Corinthians 13. Now, I think that because we usually read this chapter in weddings, when we're just thinking about everything that's wonderful and beautiful and grand, we don't actually pay attention to what Paul says. But I want us to take another look at 1 Corinthians 13, because I think Paul actually sets us up for some of the realities of marriage that sometimes I think we try to avoid and pretend like aren't there. A few notes before we jump into the text. The first is that 1 Corinthians 13 is not about marriage. Okay, I think we've sort of relegated 1 Corinthians 13 to marriage. It actually has nothing to do specifically with marriage necessarily. It is about how to love other people. Okay, so obviously it applies to marriage because we want to love our spouse, right? But it is not just about marriage. So I think we need to sort of remove 1 Corinthians 13 from just being about marriage. So also another note, even if you're not married, nor have any intention of being married. No matter what relationship you have, I hope what we talk about today will be applicable. It might just be, might need to change the application a little bit to your relationships with your coworkers or your friends, but I think much of what we talk about this morning has great application to every relationship we have in this world. So 1 Corinthians 13. I wish we had time to kind of delve into the entire chapter, but we don't. But the final verse, verse 13, kind of summarizes what Paul is talking about. He says, "Now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love." So he starts the chapter by talking about how he could prophesy. He could have faith to move mountains. He could have great knowledge. But if he does not have love, it is nothing. Then in verses 4-8, he describes what love is. And this is where we're going to spend our focus this morning. So let's read our passage again. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 to the beginning of verse 8. "Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails." So here Paul describes for us what love is by giving us several qualities of what it is and what it is not. Now I have to take issue with Paul here because I think if he's trying to get us to love other people, he's chosen some terrible words to do so. Because when I read this text, all I think is, man, this is going to be rough. This is hard work. This is tough. I think Paul, if he was really trying to just sort of set the stage better, maybe he would have written that love is healing, that love transforms, love brings joy, love is majestic. But he doesn't do that. And what's the first quality Paul says love is? Love is patient. Have you ever paid attention to that? When do you have to be patient? Think about it. When do you have to be patient? When someone isn't acting the way you want them to. So the first thing Paul tells us is, if you want to love someone, be prepared to deal with someone who's not going to act the way you want them to act, but you got to figure out how to be patient with them. I looked at the dictionary definitions of patience. It's rough. Having or showing forbearance when faced with opposition or challenge from others. Bearing pains or trials calmly or without complaint, able to accept or tolerate delays, problems, or suffering without becoming annoyed or anxious. And Paul says this is the first thing you got to be ready for if you're going to love somebody. Who's ready to sign up for love? Anybody? I'm out of this, man. Forget this. I don't want to deal with this. So right out of the gate, Paul is telling us love is no easy matter. But you go down the list, and what else is there? Love is not easily angered. Basically telling us, get ready to have reasons to be angry, but just don't be too angry about it. Don't be easily angered. But there's going to be reasons for you to get angry. It keeps no record of wrongs. Get ready to be hurt and betrayed. You're going to have to forgive some people. Love perseveres. Do we like thinking about love being something we just have to persevere through? That's what he's saying. Perseveres. This is a long, hard road. I think what Paul is trying to tell us is this, is that if you're going to have deep relationships with people, whether a spouse or a friend or a coworker, expect problems, always. Expect problems. The reason is this. We're in relationships with people who are different than us. They have different personalities and different values and different backgrounds and different family systems that they come from. And so it's just inevitable that you and the people you're in relationship with are not going to have the exact same personality. You're not going to have the exact same values. You're not going to have the same beliefs. You're not going to have the same families you grew up in that have the same family traditions. And so you're going to be different. And that's part of the challenge of being in deep relationship with people is how to manage that. You know, modern psychology is finding what Paul, I think, is setting us up for to be the case, that relationships bring challenges to us. John and Julie Gottman are two of my favorite people when it comes to relationship therapy. They're sort of known as some of the best out there when it comes to marital relationships and therapy. And what they have found is that only 31% of couples' major areas of continuing disagreement were about resolvable issues. Only 31%. Which means, if you do the math, 69% of the time, they were about unresolvable, perpetual problems. We're in relationships with people that are different than us. And sometimes, there are issues that cannot be resolved. Dan Weil says it best. Inspirational quote for the day. You'll see, it's not very inspirational, but it's true. There is value when choosing a long-term partner in realizing that you will inevitably be choosing a particular set of unsolvable problems that you'll be grappling with for the next 10, 20, or 50 years. Ready to get married? But it's true. I see a lot of my proteges over here. I do a lot of premarital counseling. I'm rough on them. I just ask them all the tough questions. We don't mess around. I don't mess around. We deal with the tough stuff. We wrestle through things. I share this quote. It's first day. I share this quote with them. When you choose a long-term partner, you're choosing a set of unsolvable problems you'll be grappling with for the rest of your life. So what are some examples? My wife has graciously allowed me to be honest today and share some of the things that we deal with in the interest of transparency and to give an example, some examples of the things that we wrestle with and that we process through. And so I'm just going to share a few of the things that we deal with, that we have to wrestle with and that we work through to give you as examples here this morning. Now, I realize also, I just want you to know I am happily married. I love my wife. Things are good, but I just want to get real about marriage today, okay? Sometimes we just need to get real. Okay, so here we go. I'm a morning person, she's a night person. Anybody else with me? Your spouse is different from you, right? So you know what the deal is, right? You know the unsolvable, perpetual problems that come with that reality. You might deal with it almost every day of your life, right? You're ready to wake up early, get going, get moving, get things done. The other person wants to sleep in, do stuff at night. So we just went on vacation a month ago. What do you think I want to do on vacation? Hey, let's get off early in the morning, be back by early afternoon, go to bed early, we're good to go. What do you think she wants to do? Sleep in. Let's go out later. Let's just enjoy the night. Let's hang out. Let's have fun. There's no solution, right? I mean, we're different. Just got to have to figure out some compromise. Right now, we're in the process of moving houses. We're going to be moving here to Grand Terrace. When do you think I want to do the work on the house? First thing in the morning. Let's wake up. Boom. Let's get going. Let's get working. When does she want to do it? At night. Actually happened this last week. She stayed there late at night. I was like, I'll wake up early in the morning. I'll do my part. It worked out well. Worked out beautifully. So, morning, night. There's no solution. It's going to be a problem we deal with for our entire marriage. There's no solution to it. You just make compromises. You got to make decisions, but it's always going to be there. Also, I like stability. She likes change, okay? So with this move, I'm very happy to move. I'm going to live 3 minutes from the church. It's going to be awesome. My parents are moving down. We've been living in their house, so we got to get out of there so they can move down. It's going to be amazing for my parents to live in the same spot, free babysitting, all that good stuff. It'd be great to have them here. But I just want to sleep for like the next year and be done with this whole thing and feel like I can be settled in the house, right? Meanwhile, Shari is up at night. She can't sleep because she's so excited and thinking about everything that needs to be done. And oh, what paint color and where are we going to put the furniture? And when I think about that, I just want to sleep and I just want to not think about it and just let it be done and let it be over with. We've been living here in California for almost 7 years. For me, I'm just getting started. For her, she's like, where are we moving next? Let's get out of her. Get out of here, because she moved a lot when she was a kid. So there's no solution to this, right? Throughout our entire marriage, we're going to be processing and dealing with these differences. Maybe some of you are married to a social butterfly. Saturday night, you want to hang out, go out to parties all the time. Your spouse's idea of a good Saturday night is sleeping, but maybe reading a good book and then sleeping, falling asleep by 9 o'clock, right? And so every Saturday night, you have the same exact discussion and different ideas of what Saturday night should be. Maybe you have issues around cleanliness and how you process and what your house looks like. And one of the huge ones is maybe you have different views on how to spend money. That's a big one. One of you is a spender. You want to enjoy life, have good things, go on vacations, do stuff. The other person wants to save and make sure that their security and just in case there's a rainy day. And so every day of your life, if you have different values around money, different views on money, every day, maybe not every day, but every week, there's going to be some discussion and something you got to work through about decisions you're going to make about how money is spent. Now, one very important caveat, and please hear me very closely. There are some things that are unsolvable problems that are not unsolvable problems that we should not accept and be okay with, okay? A couple. It's not okay to say my spouse has issues of faithfulness, okay? That's not an unsolvable problem. That's not what we're talking about. That's not okay. It's not okay for a spouse to have a bad temper and to be physically violent. That's not okay. It's not okay for a spouse to be verbally abusive. That's not okay. That's not something we just sort of let slide. I'm talking about personality issues, value issues, just sort of the everyday, day-to-day things. When it comes to abusive situations, violent situations, unfaithfulness situations, we're talking about a whole different situation. And if you are in that situation, we can get you referred to some counselors. We will help pay for it if you need it. We want to get you in the best situation. I'm not talking about accepting completely dysfunctional relationships, but I am suggesting that in every relationship, there's going to be challenges, that we're different people, and there are things that we're going to have to work through. The important thing, I think, to remember is this. The grass is not greener on the other side. No matter who you marry, no matter who your best friends are, no matter who your coworkers are, you're going to have a set of unsolvable, perpetual problems. So you might trade your spouse in for a different one. You might trade your friends in for new ones. You might move your job and work with different coworkers. But it's just going to take a little bit of time, and you'll figure out and learn what those new, unsolvable, perpetual problems are. And so what the Gottmans talk about is the fact that these are unsolvable, that they're just always going to be there, but that the goal is not to try and solve them and to just resolve them, but instead to engage in healthy dialogue and understanding around the issues. The key thing is to avoid getting what they call gridlocked, where there's no dialogue taking place, or where even when you try and attempt to, they just utterly fail, that there's no healthy understanding and dialogue and discussion back and forth. And so what they talk about is that instead of spending lots of time getting upset at our partner for being who they are or trying to fix them and make them more like us, instead what we should be spending our time is in trying to understand our partner, understand where they're coming from, why they do what they do, and figuring out how you can make it work. So the goal is not to fix all the problems, not to try and change our spouse, but instead to understand them and to figure out how this relationship can work. So I want to encourage you to do that if you're married, to do that with your spouse, but even just think about it with your friends, and I think it would be even valuable with your coworkers, you know, to understand your coworkers. You're probably very different from some of your coworkers. Some you get along with better than others, but why do your coworkers do what they do? Guess what? The ones that annoy you, they're equally annoyed by you too, right? So maybe just talk it out, okay, you know, and figure out how you can figure things out. So dialogue and understanding is the key to managing these unsolvable problems. And I believe that actually Paul's description here in 1 Corinthians 13 gives us some of the key qualities and characteristics of how dialogue can be possible through our marriages and through these situations. Now, I'm just going to share three. We go through each one, but in the interest of time and what our brains can handle at once, I'll just do three brief ones, sort of share some examples of what this might look like. First of all, in verse 4, Paul says that love is not proud. We all must be willing to accept the fact that our way is not the only way. There are other valuable ways of living in the world, seeing the world, and I must have the humility to embrace that reality. Pride gets in the way of dialogue. In fact, dialogue is impossible because we already have all the answers. We know the right way to do everything, and it simply destroys relationships. Not only, I think, do we need to accept the fact that other people live in different ways, but perhaps part of not being proud, too, is being for us to be open and flexible to trying new things. I know I've grown incredibly from my relationship with Shari, and I believe I've become a better person because of it. And I think our spouses, their differences, if we engage with it, we can actually grow from it. So if you want to, you know, maybe you always thought, hey, every Saturday night I just want to stay home and read a book. Maybe as you go out and go to some parties some more, you begin to realize, like, hey, this is actually kind of nice. Like, I can do this once a month, or I can do this twice a month. This is a good thing. And the other partner's like, hey, you know what? I don't have to go out every Saturday night. You know, sometimes just staying home reading a good book, that's a good Saturday night too. So I think not being proud opens us up to growth and seeing things in a new way, isn't? And is very important when it comes to staying in dialogue with our spouses. Second, in verse 5, he says that love is not self-seeking. At the foundation of every healthy relationship are two people who equally desire the other's greatest good, who want their partner to thrive and be fulfilled. And we've talked about these unsolvable problems and the fact that, you know, sometimes these two things are in conflict, that what each partner, their ideal situations, simply cannot both be accomplished. And this is where we learn the art of compromise. And for compromise to work, we need two partners who are equally desiring the other's greatest good. If one partner desires it more than the other person will always have their way, and it can easily lead to abusive situations. But one of the lessons I've learned from the Gottmans is what they talk about is around this issue of compromise. And they talk about keeping our core area of inflexible need as small as it possibly can be, and to keep the larger area of what is flexible as large as it can be. So on these issues where there are these unresolvable, perpetual problems, so what are the core areas? And trying to keep for you personally what that core area is as small as you possibly can be. So when I think about mornings and when I'm on vacation, you know, look, my ideal might be to leave at 7 a.m. But that's unrealistic, right? I mean, that's just way too early if I'm going to be respectful and compromise. So I can say, you know what? Look, I can give you 9 or 10 o'clock, but I can't go later than that. You know, that's just too far for me. And then we talk about the night. Okay, what's the latest? Okay, I can give you 9 o'clock, but not to, you know. You try and keep that core area of inflexible need as small as it can possibly be, while keeping the area for compromise as big as it possibly can be. I think an important principle to also keep in mind with this is that there might be seasons in life in which one partner will need to compromise and sacrifice more for the other. Maybe one of you has gone back to school, or one of you is dealing with a health issue, or maybe a family member's in crisis and you're having to take care of an aging parent or grandparent. And so the stress is greater on one person as opposed to the other. These are times for things to be unbalanced, for the compromise to not be balanced, that we go out of our way to support and to help the other person. There's actually a couple in our congregation that I think models this beautifully, and it's Steve and Kelly McCann. Now, Steve is a pastor. He's a pastor for a long, long time, and Kelly is a nurse, but her true love is actually teaching. And she was a professor at Pacific Union College, and Steve had a church nearby, and so things were great. But then Steve had a call, and he had to move to a different church that was far away from the campus. And they were going to try and make it work, but there was just no way to make it work. And so Kelly gave up her job as a professor in order to follow Steve to his church. It was a great sacrifice, and it was even tough for Steve to accept that because he saw and he knew how much Kelly loved teaching, and that really was her calling in life. Fast forward a little bit later, Loma Linda University knows that Kelly is a great teacher and they want her on staff here. And so they approach her and they decide as a couple to explore that move and to explore if it might work out. Sure enough, Kelly gets the job. Steve is a pastor. He would like to remain being a pastor. Reach out to the conference. Unfortunately, right now, this conference is not hiring too many outside pastors. They will do it a little bit here and there when it comes to some specialties. So like Pastor BT with a specialty in media, did that with young adult, with Pastor Jesse, we did that. But for the most part, staying in conference and just sort of keeping the pastors that we currently have. And so there was no job for Steve. And so Steve quit his job as a pastor and now is working at Loma Linda University at the hospital in patient care. Does Steve want to be a pastor? Still does? Absolutely. And we're hoping and praying that that's going to be possible sometime soon here. But talk to him this week. He has no regrets whatsoever about the decision that he made. He believes it was the right decision. He's happy in his current job. He knows it's exactly what he needed to do. So both Kelly and Steve, in different seasons, the different stages of their life, made the greater sacrifice and made the greater compromise. But sometimes that's what has to happen in any healthy relationship. Sometimes we have these issues where there's no easy or simple solution where both people are fully satisfied and fully have exactly what they would want to do. But that's when the art of compromise comes in and we have to figure out how we can work through these situations. The third one is love always trusts. You know, trust is really the key to every healthy relationship. And the key to remaining in dialogue is to trust our partner, believing that they have the best intentions, believing that they are being truthful, that they are worthy of being trusted and worthy of compromising with. And you know, I think part of the challenge of keeping this trust is the fact that, you know, some of these issues that we're dealing with, it's easier to deal with it maybe early on in the relationship, the third or fourth time you sort of had to wrestle through this challenge or these compromise situations. But are any of you on like the 1,000th or 5,000th or 10,000th conversation about a particular issue? You've dealt with the morning or night issue that many times? Yeah, we have, right? Some of us probably have. Have you had thousands of conversations about money, decisions on money? Yeah, absolutely. You constantly are having these discussions and decisions. And sometimes it can be difficult to remain trusting and supportive and wanting to dialogue and wanting to work through these issues. One of the things the Gottmans talk about is avoiding the trap of criticism, of feeling contempt for our partners, and trust is what helps us remain in healthy dialogue with one another. So, what is the perfect marriage? If I were to summarize, what is the perfect marriage then? As we talked about, I mentioned earlier, we talked about this in the parents' Sabbath school class, and somebody mentioned that, you know, they were married and they were having some, you know, having some challenges in their relationship, and they thought they were the only ones that had these issues. And then as they began to talk to other people, they realized, oh, sort of every couple deals with these things, and that this was a very normal thing that everybody dealt with. And she said, no one has the perfect marriage. And I had to disagree with her. I agree with the sense that we all have our challenges and things we have to work through. But I disagree with the notion of what a perfect marriage is. Because is a perfect marriage one where there are no challenges or issues? Is there someone out there who perfectly fits us and we won't have issues with and is exactly the person we need in our lives? Absolutely not, right? Absolutely not. So we need to redefine what it means to have the perfect marriage. Perhaps this is part of the key to healthier relationships. A perfect marriage is one in which both partners accept each other for who they are and their differences that they bring to the relationship. A perfect marriage has two partners who learn how to dialogue and compromise on the unsolvable issues in their relationship. A perfect marriage has two partners who aren't proud, who aren't self-seeking and always trust. And a perfect marriage grows and embraces that love is more than just those initial warm, fuzzy feelings that come at the beginning of the relationship. One of the other people in the class talked about the fact that she's realized how important it is for her love to grow. They have kids. They've both hurt each other deeply. They've had to forgive each other. They've been through great moments, and they've also been through some difficult moments. And she always had, this notion, I wish we could just go back to the early days when everything was great and everything was perfect. And she realized that actually, no, the love that they now have for each other is far deeper. Because they've had to forgive each other, because they've been through stuff, because they've had the challenges and issues in the relationship, and they've stayed strong throughout it. They've had their ups, they've had their downs, but through it all, they have stuck by each other. And so while they might not have all the warm, fuzzy, innocent puppy love feelings anymore, the love that they now have is far deeper than anything they had when they first met each other. Let us not accept the movie romantic stories as what marriage is all about. I think the following poem summarizes it beautifully. It was written by Rajiv Sigamoni and inspired by something written by Samir Salmanovich, and it's called The Lines Between Us. Two men were sitting in a cafe talking about life, and to be quite specific, their wives. One was a man of middle age and the other a gray-haired senior. The middle-aged man spoke honestly without hesitation to the other. I don't know how you do it. My wife is getting old, and there's nothing I can do to stop the hand of time. That beautiful face I remember looking into for hours is slipping away, and all I see in its place is lines and wrinkles. Her beautiful body, which I long to touch with the yearning of youth, has been distorted by stretch marks where once there was only perfection. So now every moment I stare at her, I cannot help but get lost in the memory of all she used to be. And in truth, I'm not sure what is left for us. The old man remained silent all this while, only smiling as one who knew better. Staring into some imaginary space, he finally replied, "I don't know how you do it. For when I look upon the wrinkles in my wife's face, I can only see the smiles we have shared together over the years that put each permanently indented demarcation of love there. When I see the stretch marks on her side, my mind is filled with the beauty of our children and all she gave for them, even the greater parts of her perfection. And in all of her so-called flaws, her body has become a map to me of our journey, a map of our history, a map of our love. And because of them, I love her all the more. So now, every moment that I stare at her, I get lost in every inch of who she now is." Hearing this, the middle-aged man wept, for he now understood that he had not yet truly learned to love.